The Sundance Film Festival opens tonight with the world premiere of Levity, an independent comedy directed by the screenwriter of Men in Black. 16 dramatic features and 16 documentaries are competing for the top prizes. Getting a film considered by the festival is the concern of any independent filmmaker. Documentarians especially are concerned because funding is becoming scarce. Many are turning to television for help. David Darcy reports.
Recent History is on the screen at Sundance this year, a look at members of the radical Weather Underground from the 1960s and 70s, a portrait of civil rights activist Bayard Rustin, and a profile of writer and intellectual gadfly Gore Vidal.
I never thought I would see the day when an American president would say, "I am not a crook." And I will say he didn't look the camera in the eye. Did you notice the eyes went... I would...
The bad news, prepare yourself. Ronald Reagan's library just burned down. Both books were destroyed. But the real horror, he had not finished coloring the second.
The film Gore Vidal is one of 10 documentaries at Sundance that are being distributed by the public broadcasting system, which airs more documentaries than any American broadcaster. Home Box Office, its closest competitor, is also premiering documentaries in Park City. About 60% of what PBS shows could be called documentaries. PBS programs are the country's largest buyers of nonfiction films. Yet in that spectrum, critics see a stylistic sameness. By showing 10 of those films, Sundance has been faulted for passing over other styles. John Anderson, author of The Oral History Sundancing, says the problem may simply be PBS's influence.
Filmmakers are not going to expend a lot of energy or a lot of finances on a movie that nobody is going to see. So they look at the model, they look at PBS, they look at HBO, and they say to themselves, what do I have to do to get my films picked up by PBS or HBO? And that's why all these films conform to the template that's already been established. And which is why, even if Sundance makes the claim that they're only picking from what's out there is what it is because of the broadcast and theatrical situation.
PBS's vice president for programming, Alice Myatt, defends the range.
I think that if you take a look at, for example, this season's American Experience or Independent Lens, and I would actually defy anyone to say that there's not diversity of formats and filmmaking style and subject matter within those series.
Sundance director Jeff Gilmore, who's part of the team that selected this year's Sundance films, says documentaries are about information as well as style. He acknowledges that there is a PBS style, and it's part of the mix.
It's customarily a certain kind of style with a lot of historical footage in it, oftentimes a biography or something which is socio-historical in its nature, and has a certain kind of straightforward, rather conventional style to it. It tends not to be the kind of stylistic excess or the kind of theatrical kind of elements that certain kinds of documentaries have. I mean, a film like Bowling for Columbine, you don't see and you don't think of when you think of something that comes out of the PBS camp.
Some filmmakers are working outside that structure. Last year, the festival showed How to Draw a Bunny, a look at the life and times of the little-known pop artist Ray Johnson. It was directed by John Walter, who made it with his own money over several years during time off from his day job, editing PBS documentaries.
And it was kind of a desire on my part to make an anti-PBS documentary. I didn't even bother taking it to PBS because it didn't fit any of their standard formats. It wasn't, you know, an American Experience film. It wasn't an American Masters. He was an unknown artist. It wasn't a Great Performances. There's no real place for it in PBS.
How to Draw a Bunny beat the overwhelming odds and got a theatrical release last fall. Filmmaker Andrew Jarecki hopes his new documentary will also make it into theaters. Capturing the Freedmans began as a story about clowns at Park Avenue children's birthday parties. It became a family saga after Jarecki learned that one of those performers came from a family whose members had been accused, prosecuted, and jailed for brutal sexual abuse, and who documented their own lives on film for several generations.
I read some of the news coverage of the case, and I was really struck by, you know, how much it sounded like a Bush speech about the war. You know, there were the bad people, and there were the good people who were going after them, and it was that simple. And that intrigued me right off the bat, because I just felt like, well, that's not how people are.
The film got darker, and the process dragged on, but Jarecki was in a fortunate position. He happens to be the founder of MoviePhone, which he sold to AOL Time Warner for almost $400 million in 1999. So he had the money to take time and risks, the two things most documentary filmmakers are forced to minimize.
So when our film morphed completely, I was more thankful than ever that we had raised the funds for the film in a way that didn't attach itself to a particular kind of programming strand.
But a connection to an institution can be what sustains a filmmaker. TV reporter Carles Bosch of Barcelona convinced his employer, Catalonian Television, to fund his two-hour film, Bolseros.
Fue un momento muy triste, muy duro.
It's the story of seven Cubans from the thousands who left for America on rafts in 1994.
These seven characters, their fortunes, their lacks or no lacks after the years, are very much representing those 30,000 Cubans who left Cuba back in 1994, which means that I'm still producing journalism.
Carles Bosch is still a reporter for Catalonian Television, but he plans to teach documentary filmmaking because he says it's near impossible to make a living making nonfiction films in Europe, just as it is in America. That's a reality you can't ignore, says Andrew Jarecki. He says if you're committed to documentaries, find a budget and a level of success you can live with.
What would make me happy at the end of this? You know, will I be happy if I make a movie that's true to my subject and that I feel good about? Hopefully that's what will make you happy, because you can win at that game. And then if you also want to have a big theatrical release, that's going to be a coincidence, a happy coincidence if that's true. But I really think it's a bad idea to start a company because later you want to sell it to a multinational conglomerate. And I also think it's a bad idea to start a film and craft it in such a way that it will be appealing to a multinational conglomerate, because you won't end up with something interesting. You'll end up with a kind of a mule.
Few documentary filmmakers will experience the level of success that Sundance alumnus Michael Moore is enjoying right now. Bowling for Columbine, his latest, has grossed more than $16 million in theaters so far. For NPR News, I'm David Darcy.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm John Idstee.